Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, etc. Introducing a star witness to the slow-motion train wreck of American Middle East policy, the best reporter we got, Patrick Coburn, from The Independent at independent.co.uk, author of The Rise of Islamic State. Welcome back to the show, Patrick. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Very happy to have you back on the show here, and happy to read you. You're one of the few who can make sense of the mess going on in Syria right now. So I guess my first question would be, what of the ceasefire, so-called ceasefire arranged between the Russians and the Americans?
Well, you know, there isn't a ceasefire in Syria, and there isn't likely to be a full ceasefire. And the arrangement that they made actually excludes Islamic State and al-Nusra. So since they are the two biggest armed opposition groups and control about half the country, much less the population, but a lot of it's desert or semi-desert, that means that fighting is going to go on. But I think it'd be, one can be too skeptical. I think what is important was that this meeting in Munich on, I think it was the 12th of February, you had the U.S. and Russia saying, one, that convoys would go to these besieged cities, which does seem to have happened, and secondly, that there was going to be this partial ceasefire. What's important here is that the two sort of biggest military powers in the world wanted this, have clout in Syria, and when Assad said he wanted to fight for a complete victory, then some senior Russian official immediately came back saying, no, we're not backing that. So what's important is that the guys who organized the ceasefire, even if it doesn't actually turn into even a 50% ceasefire, are really influential. They do have the clout. These are what used to be called the superpowers.
Well, now, okay, I guess it's pretty easy to see, you know, how much influence Russia has over the Syrian government. If Putin wants Assad to do something, then he's pretty much going to do it. We saw that with the chemical weapons. And of course, we know that America has been training up these so-called mythical moderates, whoever they are, for years and years here. But how much clout does America really have over which factions? They don't even seem to have clout over their allies in Riyadh and Ankara, much less the proxy armies.
They pretend, you know.
Yeah?
They kind of want to. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, the Turks would like to invade northern Syria, so would the Saudis. They'd quite like to do that if the U.S. Doesn't want it. I suppose they might go for it. But, you know, what the U.S. has been trying to do is seal off northern, basically seal off northern Syria. They wanted to do that with the Turks originally. But Turkey was letting supplies into ISIS-held areas, volunteers going there, oil out of ISIS areas. So eventually the U.S. sort of was doing it with the Syrian Kurds, sealing off the border from the Syrian side rather than from the Turkish side. But, yeah, I mean, it, you know, one of the reasons it's a great mess is the U.S. is kind of doing this, you know, really what it's done since 9/11, which is it sort of wants to do something to the jihadis, to ISIS, to Al-Qaeda-type organizations, but it doesn't want to quarrel with its big Sunni allies, notably Saudi Arabia and Turkey.
Mm-hmm. And so, how many Saudis, I mean, there are various reports of Saudis sending some kind of field army to bases in Turkey in preparation for something, but that just doesn't really ring true. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they're sending planes. You know, Saudi policy is kind of pretty crazy at the moment with Prince Mohammed bin Salman, this young prince who sort of seems to dominate his father, the king. They've started this war in Yemen, which isn't going too well. They executed this Shia religious leader earlier in the year. Now they say they're going to get involved in an invasion of Syria. This is pretty crazy stuff. You know, well, what Saudi Arabia has is money. Well, there's less of it these days with the price of oil down. But when he gets involved in operational things like air wars and so forth, things never go so well.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting beaten even in Saudi territory by the Houthi rebels in northern Yemen right now, right there on that border region, seems like.
Yeah, they got sort of, in, you know, they've sort of got involved in this. In Turkey, the same thing, you know, that they talk really tough. President Erdogan talks, you know, about really sticking it to the Kurds. And that's the real enemy. It's not Assad or any more ISIS or anybody else. It's the Kurds they're after, particularly the Syrian Kurds. Mm-hmm. But they don't really do much. But their sort of policy is kind of, seem to make it up on the day or on the week. You know, they shot down this Russian bomber last November, which wasn't a great idea because the Russians sent more planes and anti-aircraft missiles. Now Turkey would quite like to move into, send its army to move into northern Syria, but then now they're facing all these Russian planes, so they can't get air supremacy. Mm-hmm. So if they did want to move into northern Syria, it was a really bad idea to shoot down that plane.
And yeah, I could see that being a tactical mistake for their strategy. But now, so when you say that, I mean, it's pretty clear, too, that Assad is second place to the Kurds in the sights of the Turkish government there. But I wonder how distant of a second place is the Assad government? Are they... is the Turkish government past their goal of regime change at this point in Damascus?
They go on repeating like this, like a sort of demented parrot, says to Saudi Arabia. It's perfectly obvious Assad isn't going to go, you know. The government isn't going to go. You know, they control most of the population. They're backed by Russia and Iran. Their army's advancing. Why should they go? But they don't seem to have a policy. You know, one way of looking at this is, you know, things have this sort of, you know, at the beginning of the war, I guess you had local forces in 2011 deciding what happened. Then you had sort of regional forces from about 2012 to 2014, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the Gulf monarchies, Iran in a rather different way. But they never, I mean, they wanted to overthrow Assad. They failed, you know, they ISIS developed. And then it's, now it's got much more sort of internationalized with the U.S. and Russia playing a much bigger role, and the regional powers aren't quite so powerful. So, you know, that is changing. I think, you know, the prospects of something happening are positive, have gone up a bit, I think, because we don't just have the Turks and the Saudis saying, you know, we want to overthrow Assad and pretending that these jihadi organizations are moderate when they're not.
Well, am I reading the Democrats right when, you know, John Kerry is kind of laying out the plan here that they mean to have a peace at some point in the, you know, somewhat near-term future between the mythical moderate groups and Assad, and then everybody from there is supposed to turn on al-Nusra and the Islamic State or fight them all at once?
Well, it sort of is even more complicated than that because who... You know, you have al-Nusra, but then you've got these other two groups that the Russians wanted to say were also terrorists, which is Ahrar al-Sham, which is close to al-Nusra, and Jaish al-Islam, which is kind of east of Damascus, sort of basically financed by the Saudis. They're both sort of extreme Sunni fundamentalist organizations. The problem, you know, for the U.S. and American allies is that if they allow these to be labeled as terrorists, then, you know, they don't have any moderates left.
Right.
But also, you know, it's kind of hypocritical, all this. You know, you watch television, you see in the newspapers that the Russians are only banning in moderates. Nobody ever says who these moderates are or where they are, you know. And why? If there's a substantial part of Syria run by moderates, why don't journalists go there, you know? And
right.
Why do they sit in Turkey or sit in Beirut? Of course, the reason is very simple. If they know if they actually turned up there, you know, they'd be in the boot of a car in 10 minutes. They'd be kidnapped, you know, because these guys aren't so moderate.
Yep. All right, hold it right there. We got to take
this
break.
They're not moderate.
We'll be right back, y'all, with Patrick Coburn from The Independent, author of The Rise of Islamic State. right after this. Independent.co.uk. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you could hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment. MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. All right, you guys, welcome back. Darn commercial messages interrupting our show here. Scott Horton talking with Patrick Coburn, the great Patrick Coburn from the Independent, independent.co.uk. This latest piece here is called The Winners and Losers Are Becoming Clear in This War, in This Syria War. Great piece, and again, he's the author of the book, which you got to read it, The Rise of Islamic State. And, yeah, where we left off... Patrick, you were talking about the kind of irony. It's kind of funny in a way to see people like Jeb Bush say, you know, protest, all of them, the politicians and the media, everybody, the D.C. consensus, that those darn Russians, how dare they bomb anybody but ISIS in Syria, which they just leave this huge omission where we know what they mean is al-Qaeda. They're mad because Russia's bombing al-Nusra and Ahrar al-Sham, which are both... loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, right?
Sure, yeah. No, it's kind of absurd. In Britain, the government won't identify the moderates, but that might put them in danger. There are meant to be 70,000 of them. They're meant to be armed, you know. Well, what makes them so shy? And, you know, the government's so shy because they don't really exist, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you have guys on the ground in Syria, you know, some village militia, some local warlord, you know, somebody pays them some money, they might join up. But that's why you have these sort of endlessly different groups. You know, they're all sort of small gangs. But to describe them as moderates is absurd.
Well, and even back in 2012, they said, well, look, the Al-Farouk Brigade, they're moderate, they want elections. But then that was their commander on film eating a dead soldier's heart. So, yeah, so
yeah,
much for
I mean,
that.
This is sort of, you know, this has happened from the beginning. No, things have changed, you know. The Russian intervention on 30th September last year, that means the Syrian army has its sort of air force, just like the Syrian Kurds have got the U.S. air force. And that puts a lot of pressure on ISIS. They're losing their connection to the Turkish border because they always were very dependent on being accessed and through Turkey. And so I think that ISIS is getting weaker at this within sort of Iraq, Syria. Mm. Of course, they'll pop up. They're popping up elsewhere in Libya and so forth.
Have they completely lost Aleppo at this point?
Aleppo, you know, is sort of there are different groups. There, al-Nusra is quite strong there. Al-Nusra, you see, you know, you have local groups that are not al-Nusra, but often they're sort of operating under license, you know. You know, it's a bit like the mafia supposedly used to operate. You know, you have lots of people who weren't necessarily part of the mafia, but they only operated, you know, under license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of like the al-Qaeda in Iraq was the under license as a smaller faction of the larger Sunni-based insurgency during Iraq War II.
Yeah, and it's sort of... So these, you know... And also they know that, you know, you can't... It's difficult to have Turkey or Saudi Arabia or Qatar give weapons directly to al-Nusra because the Americans, the Russians might object. But it's much better if you let some other organization down the road continue to exist. then that gets the TOW missiles, whatever it is, and they hand them over to you.
Right. In fact, just yesterday, Patrick...
There's a pretty practical reason why al-Nusra would want these other groups to go on existing. And also, you know, they sort of, you know, they just move into, they're close enough to, they kind of are al-Sham and al-Nusra are much different. They just sort of don't put up their flags and close to the Turkish border where Western television can see them. You know, they put up Arar al-Sham flags instead.
Mm-hmm.
So they're quite sort of clever about publicity. They know it would be a bad idea to sort of have all these al-Nusra flags within sight of a lot of television cameras.
Mm. Yeah, that's funny. The moderate groups basically is just kind of different names for the arms acquisition part of the al-Nusra front. There's a quote from the State Department spokesman just a day or two ago where he said, "The reality of the situation in both Syria and Iraq is that equipment and various weaponry, while given to the good guys, sometimes end up in the hands of the bad guys."
Yeah, I mean, it's not just sometimes, you know, there's a continual flow. But, you know, now, you know, the last sort of corridor really linking the opposition north of Aleppo to Turkey is sort of under attack. It's something called the Azaz Corridor. The Turks are havering. Do they want to get involved or not? How far will they get involved? On the other hand, if they don't do anything, then they can see their whole policy in Syria since 2011 turning into a disaster. They've got half their southern frontier with run by the Syrian Kurds. So they're tempted to do it. Will they do it? We, you know, we don't know. What they'd like to do would be sort of edge the U.S. into getting involved, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Mm. All right, now, you talk a lot in your book about the Saudi donors, the kind of private and pseudo-private Saudi donors who have supported the Islamic State and al-Nusra Front to a degree. And I had found this great quote from Prince Saud al-Faisal in the Financial Times, where he had told John Kerry, Daesh, that's the Islamic State, is our response to your support for the Dawah. And, of course, Hillary Clinton is in the...
Yeah, I mean, that's the way the Saudis look at it.
And has that changed at all? Because, of course, the current narrative is that, well, yeah, the Saudis were donating to some extremists, but we made them stop now. I see the Brookings Institution guys claiming
that. I couldn't prove the opposite, you know, but it's the nature of money. But when you have guys as tough as Islamic State, you know, is it likely they're going to be confined and spend a lot of energy trying to tax the local vegetable market and not try to get money from sympathizers, rich sympathizers in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait and elsewhere? It seems to be very unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of, there's a sort of consensus this isn't happened. And among foreign experts, if you go to Iraq itself, there's a or Syria, there's a consensus the other way that, yeah, these guys quite certainly are getting money through donations and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, you know, what Syrians and Iraqis think about this is probably true.
Yeah. And did you see the Nancy Youssef piece about the Baata Brigade fighting in Syria, where we're backing them in Ramadi against the Islamic State, but then we're backing the rebels, the so-called rebel groups like Arar al-Sham against them in Syria?
I didn't see that one, you know, it's sort of, but it's always been the case, you know, of sort of a different policy in Iraq from Syria.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Now, I had seen another piece that said that the Iraqi army, the Shiistan army, is building up forces currently in Kurdistan, preparing for a joint assault on Mosul. Do you have any idea when or if that might come?
I'd be a bit dubious. I was just in Kirkuk and in KRG. I didn't see much sign of that. The Iraqi army, despite all this talk about having taken Ramadi, you know, still has its very limited number of combat troops down at Ramadi. The Kurds don't want to get involved in an assault on Mosul, be caught up in street fighting and so forth. And also, there are other problems. You know, one looks at this in some political and military terms, but the price of oil being down means, you know, the Kurdish government's got no money. It can't pay people on the government payroll. You know, that's one of the reasons so many of them are desperate trying to reach Europe. So there's a real sort of economic calamity there. It's difficult in those circumstances to, you know, if you can't really pay your own troops to launch an attack on Mosul. Mm. At the same time, ISIS is getting weaker there. You know, I've just been in touch with a lot of people who just left Mosul, and they were saying it's getting, you know, there's very little electricity, clean water, prices are very high, there are no jobs. And they also say ISIS is getting crueler and sort of nastier in enforcing regulations, you know, that they're sort of women being sort of wearing not only, you know, these a full robe, but also gloves and socks and everything else. And if they don't, then the man with her gets lashed and so forth, or they get attacked. And they say this is getting more vicious, particularly from Saudis and Libyans who are ISIS members.
They do have a way of wearing out their welcome, don't they, these Al-Qaeda and Iraq types?
Thing, yeah. So such sympathy as they did get before, I think, is going right down. On the other hand, these guys can still fight, you know, and they're not planning to run for an election, you know, so
right. They
may be losing public sympathy. But, you know, people just try and get out. It's difficult to get out because they don't want a mass exodus, so people have to pay $400 or $500 to smugglers to get them out, who may be connected to ISIS, to, you know, and have to kick back to ISIS a proportion of that money.
Amazing. All right, well, listen, I could keep asking you questions like this all day, but I will let you go, like, in the deal. I sure appreciate you coming back on the show, Patrick.
Not at all.
All right, y'all. That is a heroic Patrick Coburn from the Independent, independent.co.uk, and the book is Rise of the Islamic State. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF founder and president Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today.